You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Well, Maggie's not in today. She's off enjoying the July 4th holiday a little early, and I hope she has a good one. She certainly deserves it. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm co-hosting today with Angela Lang of Block, and I will be also co-hosting another day this week. And I'm glad you're still listening. I hope you listen to Todd Albaugh's show, which is always a fun show to listen to. I listen to that as often as I can and always when I'm driving into the studio here for Maggie's show. Angela, how are you doing?
I'm good. As we mentioned a little bit over the break, I am on vacation, which is nice. We're off through this week with the 4th of July holiday. So it's been nice to catch up with some friends over the weekend. I went to Summerfest. It was good.
Who'd you see at Summerfest?
Megan Thee Stallion.
I was.
It was a really, really good show. High energy. I don't know how she does it. Really good time. The Journal Sentinel had a really good kind of write-up of the concert and everything, too. Her opening act wasn't able to be there due to, like, travel or weather-related travel, but it was still a really good time. We saw some folks in front of us that had T-shirts that said Seniors for Megan, and it was really cool to see, you know, all sorts of different folks come out and see her and have a good time.
It was one of her first concerts of the season, is what I read in the Journal Sentinel.
Yep. Good time.
Good show. Oh, that's neat. I was in the Chicago suburbs for 24 hours or 28 hours over the weekend visiting my two brothers and two sisters, and we had a lot of fun. We went to an Italian restaurant in Highwood, which is on the North Shore. It's a restaurant that's been open for 100 years, and my family, I remember going, you know, when I was a little kid, so I've been going for six decades to this, and I had an image of my dad the last time he went there. He literally was crawling up the steps to get into that little restaurant, so it was fun to be there. We had a good time.
Nice.
Do you have any special plans for the July 4th weekend?
I don't. I might check out some different events. I see that there's kind of like a People's Independence Day that some local organizations are putting on. Just kind of, you know, sit in this moment if people don't feel like the 4th of July is something that they resonate with. But for me, I'm just going to hang out with friends and enjoy the weather, hopefully. I haven't looked to see what the weather forecast is like. Hopefully it's nice and just spend some time outside.
Makes sense to me. I want to ask our listeners how you are sitting in this moment, how you are feeling about the country, how you are feeling about patriotism right now. I went to a friend's open house party last night, and one of the people there said, you know, what happened to our country? And I get that a lot when I'm visiting with people. So the number to call here is 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Give us a call or a text. And we'll try to air it here on the air and bounce around between me and Angela and you just to see where you're at on this. For me, patriotism has always been kind of a tricky concept because I understand from my studies that patriotism itself can lead to its toxic cousin nationalism. And that it can cause a lot of damage. And I remember an article Howard Zinn wrote for the Progressive, where I was the editor back in, I think, 2006 or something, where he said, you know, put away your flags. Patriotism's too dangerous because it turns into nationalism. Nationalism leads to war, and war kills a lot of people. So, you know, there's something to that argument. On the other hand, you know, I think that the most successful way to do activism, or one of the most successful appeals of activists, is to appeal to the better ideals of this country. And I love those ideals. You know, I love life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. I love, you know, the First Amendment. I love a lot of the stuff in our founding documents. I love, you know, Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, which I memorized as a kid. And so all these founding ideals are worth celebrating, and we can't surrender all that stuff. We need to uphold it and then make our government uphold them too. That's the problem right now, the way I see it. But, you know, when this woman asked me what country are we living in, I had to say, you know, it's not the country of our ideals. It's, you know, we're not supposed to kidnap and send people to prison overseas. We're not supposed to throw people in jail for expressing their political views. We're not supposed to grab people off the street because of the color of their skin. We're not supposed to have the Marines, you know, in our major cities. We're not supposed to have a president bombing any country he wants, anytime he wants, though that's been happening, you know, since World War II. So, you know, it's a strange time to be an alert person who understands the risks of nationalism, understands the power of this country, understands the negative currents that we're all swimming in right now. So it makes July 4th kind of tricky. So how are you sitting with it?
Yeah, it's strange, right? Because I think, you know, for me, as I've gotten older and older, I've felt less excited for the 4th of July. And I think there's a lot of Black folks that I know that resonate with that feeling of, you know, why celebrate a country that doesn't feel like it celebrates or even likes us or puts up with us. So a lot of folks have said that, you know, Juneteenth is Black folks' Independence Day. And so I've often felt like a disconnect from the 4th of July. But this also feels a little bit different because there are these things that are magnified in ways that we've never seen, this different level of fascism that we've never seen, and authoritarianism that I think is incredibly scary and overwhelming to think about. And also at the same time, reflecting that, you know, I have mixed feelings when people say, oh, I don't recognize this country, or this is not what the United States is. And I'm like, in some cases in history, it actually is, though. And so while some of these things are new to us, we also know that there have been communities that have been marginalized for years that often already struggled with what Independence Day looked like for them.
Yeah, I have the Langston Hughes poem, America's Not America to Me, ringing in my ears right now. Mm. We have a text from Steve in Milwaukee. I don't even know if the 4th of July is worth celebrating right now. He writes, especially with the way the Supreme Court is undermining our Constitution, as it did again with the unbelievable ruling on birthright citizenship. I hope it when they take the substance of that question before them in this next term that they will come out on the right side, but who knows with this group. So we're encouraging a conversation here on how you're going to celebrate July 4th, what patriotism means to you, where you see our country right now, how we get out of this mess, which is another question I got asked 2 days ago. The number to call is 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. I mean, the way we get out of it is resistance from below and incompetence from above. I think that's what's going to save us. But
yeah, what a formula, right?
It's the best I can come up with. But I certainly am a believer in nonviolent resistance and protest, and the No Kings rallies were so great. And I went to I didn't go to the big one in Madison. I went to one in Stoughton, which was pretty big, 350 people in Stoughton at 9 o'clock in the morning. And then McFarland had one at 10, so and they're close to my house, so I went to both of those, and there were 250 people in McFarland, and there were protests all across Wisconsin in cities and tiny towns. That's what was so amazing to me. So I'm very encouraged by the resistance from below, and I understand that Trump is a clinical narcissist and is going to be incompetent because of his pathological narcissism. But on the other hand, he can be very dangerous, you know, as we saw with, you know, the bombings. And he said today he's going to continue bombing if he thinks Iran has got weapons again. So, you know, that's going to be something certainly to watch out for.
Yeah. And then to know, right, and there were jokes and, you know, this is not to take away the gravity of like the moments we're in, but I think sometimes people are coping with humor to try to get through this moment. But someone said, you know, this man literally started launching bombs because no one came to his birthday party. And like, as joking as that is, like, that also feels very true, right? Like, this man is very much driven by ego and personality and perception, which is incredibly, incredibly dangerous, not only for the country, but for the world and for world stability. And, you know, to know that there was this military parade that feels very, you know, dictator-esque, And then all of a sudden we have the 4th of July where he wants to sign, you know, this terrible bill that kicks a bunch of people off of health insurance. And it's just going to be terrible for so many Americans. So I think the 4th of July is more so a commemoration. It doesn't even necessarily feel like it's a celebration specifically.
Yeah. And I guess over the last couple of days, he's been complaining that he hasn't been nominated or received the Nobel Peace Prize yet.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy's ego is bigger than the Kohl Center here. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've got that to contend with. You know, I wanted to just mention, since we're talking about different ways people have looked at July 4th, Frederick Douglass had a very famous passage that I just want to read briefly about, this was 1852, this is while slavery was still there. What to the American slave is your 4th of July? I answer, a day that reveals to him more than all other days in the year the gross injustice and cruelty to which he's the constant victim. To him, your celebration is a sham, your boasted liberty, an unholy license, your national greatness, swelling vanity, your sounds of rejoicing are empty and heartless, your denunciations of tyrants, brass-fronted impudence. I love that. Your shouts of liberty and equality, hollow mockery, your prayers and hymns, your sermons and thanksgivings, with all your religious parades and solemnity, are to him mere bombast, fraud, deception, impiety, and hypocrisy. Man, that guy could talk.
Yeah. I mean, but it's true. You know, when you think about how people celebrate freedom, right, there isn't like a freedom for all. It's in, you know, the national anthem, freedom and justice for all. And I think for all has been missing for quite some time. And so while people, even long before the MAGA days and pre-2016 and Donald Trump, I think even before then, people were celebrating 4th of July, thinking that things were, you know, decent enough, but there were still folks that were slipping through the cracks that didn't feel that they had anything to celebrate. And I think that's what Frederick Douglass was mentioning.
Yeah. And Susan B. Anthony said similar things at the 100-year celebration. Mm-hmm. I have a little quote from her, if I can call it up real quick before we have to go to break. We got 1 minute to break. I'll try to get a paragraph here. We cannot forget, even in this glad hour of the 100th anniversary, that while all men of every race and clime and condition have been invested with the full rights of citizenship under our hospitable flag, all women still suffer the degradation of disfranchisement. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Matt Rothschild, subbing in today for Maggie with Angela Lang, and we want you to join this conversation on patriotism, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
We're back. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm hosting with Angela Lang today on the Maggie Dawn Show. Thanks for listening. You can join our conversation on what patriotism means to you. How do you feel about it, given all that's happening in our country right now? The phone number is 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. You can call or text, and we'll try to get your comments on the air. I know that Mark from Prairie du Sac texted about Trump is totally wrong about the 14th Amendment and birthright citizenship. We appreciate that text. I was talking before the break about our great activists and orators who tried to appeal to the best values of our country, and no one did it better than Martin Luther King. So this is from his famous last speech the day before he died. But this is a segment that you don't hear all the time. It's about not living up to what we're supposed to be as a country. So let's play that, Jacob.
What you say to America is be true to what you said on paper. If I lived in China or even Russia or any totalitarian country, maybe I could understand some of these illegal injunctions. Maybe I could understand the denial of certain basic First Amendment privileges because they haven't committed themselves to that over there. But somewhere I read of the freedom of assembly. Somewhere I read of the freedom of speech, somewhere I read. Of the freedom of press, somewhere I read. That the greatness of America is the right to protest far right.
That's Martin Luther King 24 hours before his assassination. Unbelievable. It's unbelievable because, A, it's so powerful, and it's even more powerful knowing what happened. But it's, C, it's so powerful because it's so relevant today. You have Donald Trump, you know, condemning all protests. You have Donald Trump arresting people for protesting against the genocide in Gaza. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, it's unreal where we are in this country. And the lack of respect by our current government for these fundamental rights that Martin Luther King Jr. was talking about so eloquently right there.
It's un-American.
It's un-American, but as you pointed out, it is American. You know, right. That's the problem. And, you know, I was airing this at home, and my wife had never heard that part of that speech from Memphis. And maybe there's a reason the mainstream media doesn't let us hear that part, and they just go for the, you know, I've been to the mountaintop. I mean, I get there with you, that part, which is so emotional and such a tug. But this is a tug also, and a really important reminder about what our values are laid out in the Declaration of Independence and in the First Amendment, and that they're still, even today or even more so today in some ways, under assault. So that's what we got to deal with. The number to call, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Angela, what do you feel when you hear that?
You know, I think the first thing that really got me was like the opening line of be true to what you say on paper, right? You know, our Constitution, our Declaration of Independence, all of these things really outline, in theory, everyone's civil liberties, rights, and knowing that that has never been true for every single person in this country is something I'm always like sitting with. And I, especially since Donald Trump was first elected in 2016, I think there was this idea of, well, we just have to get rid of Donald Trump and things will go back to normal. And while we long for the days of normal, we also have to recognize that there is still work to do under the previous normal, right? We will never be normal again. And how do we work towards a democracy that is actually inclusive and representative of all folks, including folks that are in jail and in prison that I feel should have the right to vote, for example? How are we taking away barriers to democracy and ending voter suppression? How do we make voting and election days a national holiday? Right. And so I think of democracy and how there is no kind of just going back to normal, because normal also wasn't working for folks. It's just, it seems a lot better by comparison, but we should also continue to try and have a more equitable democracy as well.
Yeah. You mentioned prisoners having the right to vote. You know, prisoner reenfranchisement is a really important voting rights, civil rights issue. Yeah. In two states in this country, you can vote while you're in prison. Maine's one of them. I think it's Maine and Vermont. In Wisconsin, you can't vote even when you get outside the prison gates.
Right.
If you're still on paper, as they call it, if you still have, you know, you still have 10, 5, 10, 15 years of probation to go through. So there are people who, you know, can't vote even. They've been productive members of the community 15 years after they've left prison. And there are a lot of good people in Wisconsin working on this issue at Expo and Wisdom and other great groups, the ACLU of Wisconsin as well. But this is an important issue that doesn't get the attention that it deserves. I hope our legislators will push this forward. I know there have been some good Democratic legislators who have been trying to do that, but prison reenfranchisement, very important issue. I'm so glad you brought that up. Angela, we're going to be back after a short break with a great person I used to work with over at the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, Sally Flores, who is head of the Wisconsin Fair Maps Coalition, organizing director there. We're going to be talking about fair maps. We're going to be talking about immigration and how do we resist the violation of our rights and of immigrant rights that we're seeing right before our eyes. So stay tuned. We'll be right back on the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Matt Rothschild here with Angela Lang.
Hey, welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Matt Rothschild here. I'm guest hosting with Angela Lang. I always enjoy guest hosting with Angela. We were talking about patriotism before the break. We got a notice from Joe, a texter who calls and texts a lot. She says, your patriotism segment, a great idea. She did try to call in a couple times, kind of get on. She said she'll keep listening and try to call back and get on. So if she does, we'll try to get her on because I always like her intelligent comments. One of our best callers here on Civic Media. And now we're joined by Sally Flores, who is the organizing director for the Wisconsin Fair Maps Coalition. I used to work with Sally a few years ago at the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. Sally, welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show.
Thanks so much for having me on. It's an honor, and it's always nice to see you.
Likewise. So I understand that you're doing some community hearings on the Fair Maps issue. Why don't you talk about that?
Yeah, so a very special group of dedicated women through the League of Women Voters has, for the last year and a half, been meeting for 2 to 3 hours every single Monday to help draft proposed legislation for an independent redistricting commission process. I joke around that I could have had 2 babies by the time that we've met. It's been amazing to see it happen. We've worked in conjunction with experts from Common Cause, from the Campaign Legal Center, who've studied redistricting across the country, and they created guides for what works better. A special shout out to Simone Leeper and Dan Lenz and Jirish Rudensky, and of course, Katie Fahey from the people.org and from the people in Michigan. She's our executive director who led a ballot initiative process. Wisconsin doesn't have that, so we have to do it the good old-fashioned way of getting legislation and then proposing a constitutional referendum and then a constitutional amendment. So this is not a sprint, and we finally don't get to build the plane in the air. We finally get to build it while it's still on the ground and take some time with it and take it to our communities. And yeah, we did just launch our first community hearing to propose and to read out this draft proposal for an independent redistricting commission this Saturday at Whitefish Bay Library. We had about 30 people registered to attend, and the room had about 23 people. So it was an amazing turnout. We had amazing moments of, we just met for 2 years and we didn't think of that. Like a lot of moments, which is what we wanted. The goal is for this to be citizen led, and we want to do right by folks. So we got a lot of great feedback, and I couldn't thank the ad hoc, not so ad hoc redistricting committee that has been meeting for so long to get this show on the road.
And you've got some upcoming hearings too in different places, right?
Yes, we do. We have, if folks are listening in from Green Bay, we have one July 16th at the Brown County Library from 5:30 to 7:30. We have July 17th in Wausau from 6 to 8 at the Wausau Public Library. We have one August 20th in Waukesha at 6 p.m. at Ingleside Hotel. And we're working our way through the state. So I'm excited to go to Door County and the Upper Peninsula and have a great time talking about Fair Maps up there with folks.
And the objective after you get all this input is to get a piece of model legislation and then have advocates in the legislature push it?
Yeah. So we are attempting to also invite legislators to the conversation. Obviously, they're not going to be our key guests or keynotes. They're going to be an audience member just like everybody else, and they're going to get an opportunity to submit questions just like everybody else. We do our best to invite and find folks in those communities to directly invite their legislator. And hopefully by winter, we'll finalize that proposal and seek some bipartisan support among state legislators. So far, with our partners at Common Cause Wisconsin, who have a legislative support tracker, there's one Republican in the 98th who supports independent redistricting. So here's to us that keep on trying. And hopefully then by winter and spring, we'll push for some passage of that proposal and then pressure legislators to pass or to help us create an amendment for the upcoming 2 sessions. So, yeah.
I mean, bipartisan is kind of tricky because occasionally you'll have a Republican legislator like Todd Novak, who'll say, you know, I'm for it, and then push comes to shove, and he vanishes.
Then he vanishes. Yeah, we are planning for a legislative lobby day in September to honor late Senator Tim Cullen. And our goal is there's 37 new folks in the legislators. There's 37 new legislators, and we're trying to introduce Tim Cullen's book. So we are planning for a legislative lobby day to introduce them to the draft proposal and gift them all a book. And there are a lot of folks who are in some of these new freshmen's districts who are ready for action. And we want to honor the late Tim Cullen and obviously have some action behind it and know that his work isn't in vain.
Yeah, Tim Cullen wrote a book on gerrymandering shortly before he died. And mm-hmm. Tim Cullen and Republican Dale Schultz, who used to be mm-hmm. chair of the Senate Republicans in the legislature, they went around the state in a dog and pony show for years and years on this issue and really did promote it. And so I wanted to salute Dale, too. Yeah. He was a real ally. Angela, you had a question.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad, just like zooming out a little bit, I'm glad you started to kind of dig into the timeline and being able to take your time and kind of build. It's only 2025, so can you explain why folks should start to pay attention to this now, knowing that this is a multi-year fight?
Yeah, well, here's hoping we have a census, right? Like, this is all only if the federal government gives us a census.
Yeah.
And we want to get ahead of that. So we want to have an independent redistricting commission sitting and ready to go by September 1st of 2030 to prepare us for the next 10 years. And in Wisconsin, like I mentioned, we don't have a ballot initiative process. So we have to go, and we want to do it there, you know, the right way. We don't want to just constantly change the Constitution all the time, because that's not what's supposed to happen. That's not democratic. But we want to introduce legislation, get bipartisan support to then help us in the, you know, two consecutive sessions, introduce a constitutional referendum and then a constitutional amendment. This doesn't happen overnight, and it's a multi-year, multifaceted approach. And it gives us time to introduce new up-and-coming freshmen to the work, as well as there's going to be an election again next year, multiple elections. And so we want to just not give people room to breathe about this, because we don't have time for that. We just don't. Mm-hmm. Even though 2030 feels like it's so far away and we're going to have a presidential election, here's hoping. By then, we'll get to really this is a labor of love, and this is a labor of time and commitment. And so that's where we're at right now. I keep saying I'm going to see redistricting through, and then I'm going to become a welder and I'm joining a union because I'm near burnout. So, yeah.
It's a process.
You've been doing great work on it. So I hope you can hold out just a little longer. And maybe, you know, in 2026, maybe next year, the Democrats will mm-hmm. get control of the state legislature. Yeah. And you know, maybe we'll still have a Democrat in the governor's chair, and then you can really get things done.
Well, you know, they learned their lesson. They had an opportunity to do this in 2009. They had a trifecta, and I don't think they expected things to go the way that they did. And so I really hope that they also don't attempt to gerrymander, and they attempt to support a independent redistricting commission. That would solve a lot of our problems. Or sure start to.
Yeah, it sure would. And when Democrats had control, they could have done a lot more in 2009. They could have done campaign finance reform, too.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
And they could have knocked out that law from the 19th century on abortion. So there would have been no issue to go to the courts on. So those were missed opportunities.
Yeah.
I hope they don't miss so many opportunities if they get control
one
again.
One of our key volunteers, Cheryl Moronto, says that gerrymandering is a bipartisan disease. And it is, and I think that should be a bumper sticker, because mm-hmm. it has to be.
We're speaking with Sally Flores of the Wisconsin Fair Maps Coalition. Sally, you're taking such a high profile on this issue, and I wonder how you feel about that, because you are a dreamer. You came over here with your parents. You're not a U.S. citizen yet, and given what the Trump administration has been doing, and given their chant of, you know, mass, you know, deportation now, and given all the ICE violations of rights, this puts you in the crosshairs. How do you handle it?
Yeah, you know, I think they've taken everything away from me that they took away my fear. At this point, I don't have a reason to hide in the shadows. People are saying you should get a P.O. box so they don't know where your address is. Like, The way that technology is, facial recognition, the way that social media, now they have social media watchdogs. And at this point, like, there's no reason in hiding. And going back to the shadows would only deter us from community organizing and mobilizing. And ironically, to be on the Independent Redistricting Commission, you need to be a voter. You need to show that you're a registered voter. And so we're leading this work as non-voters because some of us value democracy. Some of us have seen what the U.S. totalitarian installed governments have done to Latin American countries, and we do not want that to happen here at home. And it's a clear, for me, it's a clear line to choose. Either what would you be doing? Would you be hiding Anne Frank in your attic, or would you be out in the streets protesting against that? Like, I think it's really a moment for people to ask themselves truly, where would they be in this moment? And if going back to the shadows is an option, I'm not taking it. I think I'm not in an opportunity to negotiate anymore. Undocumented people have always been on the menu, never at the table. We have constantly been promised some sort of reform, regardless of what president, regardless of what political party, we've always been the pawns. I do some contracting work to help get out the vote. And in this last presidential election, some of my teams knocked 250,000 doors. Other folks, I contracted with the AFT local union just because the nature of fair maps doesn't do get out the vote. So I was like, I have time for this. And I'm a good turf cutter. And we also were able to change the early vote site numbers at METC by 3 times. And, you know, it tripled. So we tried, we did our best, but we knew that regardless of who was in office, who would win, we take the L either way. Like, we've always been pawns, so I refuse to be a political pawn.
And you're not hiding in the shadows. I saw a picture of you leading a immigrant rights rally in Milwaukee about a month ago, so... I was taken aback because I thought, holy smoke, Sally is really risking a lot by sticking her neck this far out. And you're also going with, you're helping Voces de la Frontera, the leading immigrant rights organization in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
I'm just curious because I keep hearing about folks who are going to their administrative hearings on immigration and are just getting grabbed. Mm-hmm. I just wonder what you advise them to do when they have a hearing coming up.
Yeah, so we are training. We have an ICE verifier training. And out of the ICE verifier training through Comité Sin Fronteras, which is an arm of Voces. Usually I was in high school and I was like organized through a group called Youth Empowered in the Struggle, went to college, was still with YES, but then you graduate and then it's kind of like, you're like in this bubble of like, where do I find my people? So that was missing. And we created Comité Sin Fronteras. We work in 4 buckets. We work in Sanctuary. We work in Migra Watch, Direct Action, and Mutual Aid. And they all
we'll have to pick it up, Sally, on the break. We just got a quick break. And then I want to get into more of your work and how you advise people and what your reaction to all these raids have been. Those are crucial questions here on The Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Matt Rothschild with Angela Lang and Sally Flores.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Matt Rothschild, subbing in for Maggie today, along with Angela Lang, and we have as our guest for the next few minutes still, and grateful for that, Sally Flores of the Wisconsin Fair Maps Coalition, who's also doing double duty, helping out Voces de la Frontera at this very tricky time. Right before the break, Sally, I was wondering about the impossible position that immigrants are in and immigrant advocates are in as to whether to go to those hearings or not, or appointments or not, because ICE has been grabbing people at those. How do you reconcile that? What advice do you give?
We are, one, encouraging everybody to request a Zoom. If COVID gave us anything, it gave us Zoom, aside for COVID. And so we're encouraging people to request virtual hearings, which is an option. Some of the folks that we've helped through our ICE Migra Watch or ICE Watch program who have been detained is that some of their attorneys will request online court hearings for them. That's their best bet. Otherwise, it's a purposeful attempt to get people to go back to the shadows. But we already know that ICE can't meet their detainment numbers. They're rounding up children, veterans, people who are born in the U.S. because they just cannot keep those quotas up. But it's also recognizing that this is a privatization of mass incarceration and cheap labor issue. We know that at some immigration facilities, folks have to work 5 days or before they can get a phone call. So, you know, they're working people like slaves, and that's what it is. It's the new Jim Crow. And, if we don't do something about it, we're going to be next.
Do you think there's a level of naivete among, some of the voting public, about what was going to happen on immigration issues? I mean, I don't know how they could have been, because at the Republican convention, you had all those signs and chants about mass deportation now. Yeah. But then, you know, I heard people say, well, he's not just picking up the rapists and criminals. Well, I mean, that was just, what did you expect when they have their slogan, the biggest deportation in American history?
I mean, my question is, did anybody read Project 2025, their playbook? They're 75, you know, they're through it all. They're, I know, over 50% through it already. And they're doing everything they said they were going to do. This isn't an I told you so moment. This is a you are effing around and you're finding out. Yeah.
So how do we work with the folks, right, that may have, this is a question I've been always wondering, especially since the election, is that folks that may have voted for, you know, Donald Trump because they didn't believe Project 2025 or there was enough guardrails or the economy, what have you. How do you bring folks in that are slowly starting to come around that realize that they have made, you know, a bad choice in how they voted?
I mean, I've never been shy from extending the olive branch. It's usually like just welcome to this side. Not that it's any better. It's just it's a little nicer. And it's also, it's not a moment to scold people. We're not in cancel culture. We don't have time to cancel people anymore. We just have time to welcome people into the space, into their rewiring process, right? A lot of them are like realizing, dang, this, like they're getting out of the matrix, for lack of better words. And they're like, oh yeah, maybe I'm never going to have $4 million. And maybe pulling up by my bootstraps, even though I don't have boots to pull myself on, is wrong. And maybe I shouldn't have voted the way I did. Like, they're having these realizations and we're seeing it, right? We saw it in the last two Supreme Court races. So it's already telling. It's just a matter of like, welcome. Like, I'm more than welcoming.
No, that's important.
How are we going to get through this period? Angela and I were talking about this before. Of course, we talk about it every time we're on the air. and I said, I thought we're going to get through it with resistance from below and incompetence from above. Do you have a sense as to how we're going to survive this?
We need to really stick with each other. I think just asking yourself, like, where would I have been if Anne Frank was knocking at my door? It's just asking yourself those questions. People might be threatened that they might lose their social security in the future if they house undocumented individuals. We no longer have sanctuary in churches and in all these spaces. And so we have to really work together to keep people safe and keep communities together. I've been a victim of circumstance. In 2018, my parents self-deported under the first Trump administration because of 287G. So doing our best to get rid of things like facial recognition technology. ICE agents are using apps to pull up our social media as soon as we're at a protest or if we show up to a verification, to an ICE verification call. So I think it's just sticking together and doing what we can to, el pueblo salva al pueblo, which means people save people. There's no other way around.
Yeah. And, you know, there are going to be risks and people are going to have to take risks. I mean, I thought for a long time that, and some of Trump's aides have been saying, if you're helping undocumented people, you know, that's a felony too. I mean, I think that may be the next round that's coming. I mean, we saw what happened with Judge Dugan and it may be, you know, Voces de la Frontera or people working there may be next. Who knows? But we can't live in fear. And that's why you're such an amazing model, I think, for people at this time. Here is Sally Flores. Works for the Wisconsin Fair Maps Coalition and does some work for Voces de la Frontera. She's a dreamer, and she is out there leading protests and going to and helping immigrants if they have upcoming meetings. Right out there, taking a lot more chances than a lot of us are, including me, with what's going on. And your courage and your principle, really commendable. I just admire you so much for all your work, and I want to thank you for coming on the Maggie Dawn Show today.
Thanks for the opportunity. I hope to be on again.
Oh, I'd love to get you back on. And we're going to be back right after the break with Tanya Atkinson, who's president and CEO of Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin. Planned Parenthood had a case before the U.S. Supreme Court, and we'll talk about that and where Planned Parenthood stands now, 3 years after the Dobbs decision. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. You can join the conversation, 855-752-4842. We'll be right back.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.